Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning and welcome to First Things First. It is Friday. CeCe's coming in hot. Woo! Jenna Wolf, that's the Hall of Famer.
I'm coming out the ozone.
This is Nick Wright.
Good morning, bro.
It is good. It is good to be with you.
You look lovely, Jenna.
Thank you so much, as do you both.
Yeah, I heard people are ripping wide receivers, so I'm coming on this TV to protect all wide receivers around the country.
Oh, really? All of them? Woo! When we talking T.O. today?
We got a big show. He's talking about Odell. We'll get to him in a second. We'll also talk about the Celtics. They could be the new front runner to land Anthony Davis. Milwaukee Bucks looking to put the clamps on the Raptors tonight, but we got to start out west. Blazers, Warriors, game two of the Western Conference Finals. KD out for this one. Might be out for a while. More on that later. Warriors trailed by as many as 17 in this one, but Kevon Looney's dunk with 53 seconds left, puts him up one. 15 seconds to go. Same score. Steph Curry to Draymond Green, and Warriors go up three. Last chance for Portland. Dame Lillard working it. Stripped by Andre Iguodala. Lillard wanted the foul, but no call there. Warriors pull out the win, 114-111. They take a 2-0 series lead now. And, oh, by the way, Steph finished the night with 37 points. Here's head coach Steve Kerr after the win.
We stole that game. I thought they outplayed us for much of the night, the majority of the night. But, you know, we brought enough competitive fire in the second half to overcome, you know, their great play.
I mean, they stole it, but they're in a stretch. They made more plays than us in, you know, the last 2 minutes, last 3 minutes. But, I mean, I like our chances going forward. I like the way we came out and competed. You know, we got to bring that same energy at home.
Nick, I'll start with you. Kerr and CJ said the Warriors stole that game. Did the Warriors win or did the Blazers blow it?
The Warriors won the game in the third quarter with that 13-0 run, instantly erasing all the work the Blazers had done in the first half. But then at the end, when the Blazers had an 8-point lead with 3.5 minutes left, 4.5 minutes left, then the Blazers blew it. Once they were up 108-100, they had 9 possessions. They scored on one of those possessions. Our friend CJ McCollum had a really rough finish to the game, 0-for-5 in that stretch. They couldn't get stops. Draymond Green was doing everything he wanted, orchestrating the offense. So it was a patented Warriors punch that got the Warriors back in the game in the third quarter that put them in position to win it. But the Blazers responded to the punch, built an 8-point lead, 4.5 minutes left, and then all of a sudden the game ends on a 14-3 run. And to me, that was partially at the end, the Warriors making plays, but more so at the end, the Blazers not being able to execute their offense, not being able to execute basic defensive fronts and personalities as far as what you're going to do when Draymond gets the basketball as far as trying to initiate the offense. So I thought the Blazers blew it down the stretch, and this is one. Contrary to what CJ said, he can be encouraged because they did play well. They did show some things. You can't get this game back. Yeah. And if they were going to make a real series out of it, they almost assuredly had to win last night.
Yeah, the Blazers did exactly what I thought they would do, and that's they would make adjustments and not turn the ball over. We knew they would try to attack Steph Curry. That doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but they did have a different game plan where they did have the bigs clamp down on Steph instead of sagging back into the lane or around the free throw line, and they did take care of the ball better. So they gave themselves a chance to win. Early in the game, what gave them the lead was they were moving the ball around, and the other guys were scoring the basketball. They shot the basketball, especially early, from a high level, especially from the three-point line, and you could see that they were re-energized with the opportunity. They really believe that they match up with this team really well. In the third quarter, and with the Warriors making that comeback, I think it's the second biggest comeback at halftime, down by 15. They grew the lead to 17, but the Warriors came out with different intensity. They started trapping. They put a press on. They started creating turnovers, and then they started scoring the basketball. Steph started scoring the basketball, and their shots started going in. The crowd got back into the game, and then it was anyone's game. So at the end of games, it's a matter of who can execute, who can make shots. I know we get into who won the game, who lost the game, but this was the tale of two different stories. Blazers make adjustments, get back into the series. Warriors go on an unbelievable run to be able to take control of the game. Blazers are able to hold them off, and then championship pedigree. That's why experience matters. That's why playing in all these playoff games matter, and that's why chemistry mattered, and that mattered in the last 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I agree with almost everything there except for the very end. It wasn't that it was anyone's game after the Warriors went on their run, but then the Blazers took it back. You're not supposed to blow an 8-point lead in the playoffs with 4 minutes left. You're just not, unless you do what the Blazers did, which is go on 9 possessions, 1 of 8 from the field, and a turnover on the final possession of the game. Like, they had CJ had wide open shots that he missed. They had an alley-oop to Myers Leonard that was a bad pass, and Leonard tried to one hand corral it instead of going up with two hands just to try to not even slam it, but just to retain the possession. They felt to me the pressure of the moment and were not able to execute in that moment. The first half, the Blazers offensively were extraordinary. I think 11 of 22 from three. But their inability to deal with what is a pretty basic defense, which is we're going to trap the pick and roll. We're going to try to force the ball out of Dame and CJ's hands. They were saying it on the broadcast on the right. Start slipping those screens. Go up like you're going to screen. When they go to the trap, slip towards the basket. That's what the Warriors have made so much of their money on the last few years is, oh, you're going to try to trap our pick and roll. We'll slip the screens and roll to the basket.
Everyone doesn't have a Draymond that's going to be right there at the point of the offense to be able to orchestrate. And they haven't been doing that all season. So now in the highest level, against the best competition, it's hard to do things. That's why Golden State does it. Good teams force you to do things that you're not good at and things you don't do. And as you watch games play out, which team can force the other team to do some things? Now, you're going to have open shots. You got to be able to make them. That's any. Toronto,
yep.
Portland. So to me, I don't get into the pressure. Because if a guy misses an open shot, it's not because of the pressure. He just missed an open shot. They could not make shots there late in the game, but you got to give the Warriors credit because that second half, what they did defensively, was the reason why they got the opportunity to win 4 out of 5 championships.
I think what you said is so key. Experience actually factors in here. Draymond said after the game, we felt okay even being down 8. We know us. We know what we can do. We just have to make a few shots. We're confident in ourselves. But at this point, is there any chance Portland can get back into this series?
Absolutely. I wanted them to do exactly this because you want guys to have confidence. What did CJ say after the game? Wow, we feel like, man, we can face up against this team. They made some adjustments, and the adjustments worked. A lot of times you get in a situation like this. Now, I know the numbers say that 91% of the teams that are down 2-0 in the conference finals, the team up 2-0, they're going to win. But you look at the game plan for game number 3, like if we can make a few more adjustments, if I make some shots, CJ and them are like, man, we're right in this series. Now, they must win game number 3. Everyone knows that. But you can be confident that how they play for 3.5 quarters, they played some championship-level basketball.
And you can even make the argument how they played the entire game would have been good enough to win if that game were in Portland and not Oracle. That 13-0 run in the fourth quarter I don't think happens if it's in Portland and not Oracle. So can they get back into this series? Yeah, they could win both games in Portland. I think in order for them to win the series, much like we felt about the Rocket series before the Kevin Durant injury we thought might have changed things, you needed to take one of these first two games, especially if you were in position to take one of these first two games. In my mind now, the Blazers are in a spot where they got to beat the Warriors 5 out of 7.
Yep.
Because they had them beat last night. They let them off the hook. And so can they get back in the series? Sure. Can they win the series? Very, very tough.
I think sometimes when we're doing shows like this, we do series a disservice because we always try to figure out who's going to win. And in these series, man, it can change a lot of different ways, all right? The home court, the Warriors, they've earned the home court. They were supposed to win those two games. Portland put themselves in position in game number 2. Now, something else, like I said yesterday, with Golden State having 2 starters already out, if they get an injury, so we keep saying, oh, man, this series is over with, then we're missing what series in NBA basketball is about. It's up to Portland in game number 3 to come out. Their season's on the line to be able to send a message because I thought they sent a partial message in game number 2 because if Damon plays the type of basketball he's capable of playing, they win that game. If CJ makes an open shot late in the game. They win the game. So regardless of what the numbers say, I'm sure Portland is encouraged when they got on that flight last night and headed back home.
All right, so the other big story is Kevin Durant. His calf injury might be a little worse than we originally thought. We'll talk about that and what that will mean for the Warriors moving forward. But coming up on the other side, can the Raptors claw back into the series against the Milwaukee Bucks? That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back. We'll get to Bucks Raptors in a second, but first some highlights sponsored by Hilton. Get a price match guarantee when you book at Hilton.com. USA Soccer Friendly, Lindsey Horan with a nice cross to Rose Lavelle for the goal.
Let me see this again. Oh, that's beautiful. Coming in with the slide right there. See the goalie? Tell me about the goalie here.
Yeah, I mean, I like the goalie, but I don't like the field. You see the grass? It's a couple blends. It's a baseball diamond. Our girl's the best in the world. Now, listen, I need another field superintendent.
This is a pretty field right here.
Padres and Pirates. Manny Machado makes the amazing rolling throw for the out.
Oh, that's good grass.
San Diego.
Oh, yeah, that's good grass. They go good grass in California, Nick.
Manny,
a couple different blends of grass out there.
Manny Machado, a free agent acquisition that's going great. Bryce Harper, free agent acquisition.
Not so great.
Not so much. Look at Manny making that play.
All right, Blue Jays and White Sox. Billy McKinney slams into the wall. Makes a terrific grab, and Yomer Sanchez's fly ball.
Oh, you see that, Nick? The difference. Now, these are professionals. You got to have a reinforced wall there.
Unlike our young lady from Avila University a few days ago.
No, now the girl from Avila might be tougher than these Major League Baseball players, but we can't reinforce the walls in college. She ran through this one. This knucklehead right here, he can handle it.
He makes the play, man. And then, hey, I'm going to throw that to second. Yeah, you're not going to advance a
baseball. He seemed a little surprised that wall was there.
Probably didn't know his middle name after this catch. Moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals, Raptors in Milwaukee for
what's
game two
name,
tonight. Ann. What's yours?
We'll keep moving.
He doesn't even talk about his first name. His middle name is Chris.
Game one could have easily gone to Toronto. Raptors were leading by 7 entering the fourth quarter, but the Bucks outscored them 32-17 the rest of the way to secure the win for Milwaukee. Raptors will try again to steal home court advantage tonight. All right, Nick, let's break it down. What's the key to this one?
Can the Raptors steal 10 minutes of rest for Kawhi Leonard and survive? Because I don't think you can ask Kawhi after a 7-game series, after averaging 40 minutes a game in the first series, after playing night after, you know, with only they have one day in between games, no extra rest, after playing 43 minutes in game one, to do that again. And what we saw in game one was that when he goes to the bench, they fall apart, and they don't, because of that, they're hesitant to let him go to the bench. So that's the first thing. Can you get him legitimate rest in the first three quarters so he is ready to go the majority, if not all, of the fourth quarter without having already played 32, 33 minutes going into the fourth quarter? And then the other big X factor for me is, what utility does Marc Gasol have in this series? They traded away Jonas Valanciunas, C.J. Miles and DeLon Wright for Marc Gasol. Why? Because Marc Gasol in his career has given Joel Embiid fits. They were trying to figure out how they would be able to counteract the big man from Philly. And even though they won that series, and even though Joel Embiid had a big impact on that series offensively, he was really stifled except for one game. Marc Gasol did his job against Embiid. This is a different monster in Milwaukee because their big man is about as different from Embiid as you can get. He wants to stay out by the three-point line. He wants to draw you away from the basket. And with the lack of depth, if Gasol doesn't have a major role, now you're asking Ibaka to play even more minutes than he's already playing, and you're in, to me, real trouble. So can they find rest for Kawhi Leonard? Can Marc Gasol be a positive in this series when it's a really tough matchup for him? Those, to me, are the two keys, not just for this game, but for this series moving forward.
I think them thinking that they played well enough in game number one, thinking if they played that well in game number two that they would win. Because a lot of teams will look at, wow, man, we were there. We could have won this game. Let's play like that in game number two. No, because Milwaukee will play better. As far as Marc Gasol is concerned, I think he's going to be okay because you have to be able to give a team something. You're not going to be good defensively where you can just take away everything. You have to be able to give them something. And Lopez shooting a three-pointer, they're going to have to be able to live and die with that compared to having Giannis into the paint. So I expect Gasol to continue because I don't want Giannis in the paint because that's more of a problem than Lopez being able to hit the threes. And if he hits those threes, they're going to win the world championship. Not only win this series,
right.
So I'm going to allow him to be able to do that. Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi is going to have to be able to get rest when he's on the court. I don't know if he's going to be able to come off the court, Nick. We see our best players, how can they preserve themselves? Because Kawhi, it wasn't the fourth quarter got him exhausted. It was those 15 points he had, in the third quarter.
And playing the entire third quarter.
To be able to keep them in the game when Milwaukee was trying to come back into this game. So don't get too cavalier with, oh, man, we can duplicate game number one. Can Kyle Lowry come back and be the second or best player? Because I believe Siakam reemerges and is that second scorer behind Kawhi in game number two.
Are we just past now waiting for Toronto's bench to step up and their supporting cast besides Kyle Lowry to really perform the way this team did and needed? I mean, isn't that really what Kawhi Leonard needs, what he got from them in the regular season?
Well, we've got to recognize, when I mentioned the Marc Gasol trade, two of those names were key bench players, CJ Myers, DeLon Wright. They're not on the team anymore. OG, this is the toughest type of reason to miss a guy. It's not even because of an on-court injury. The guy had an appendectomy, and he has not been able to play. Now you're down three key bench players. Your fourth key bench player is Fred VanVleet, who's been playing but in name only. He's 4 of 28. That'd be a bad batting average, much less shooting percentage over the last two series. They might have to dust off Jeremy Lin. They might have to try to get the first guard off the bench, someone other than VanVleet, because they can't play a six-man team. You can't be a six-man team against the Bucks, who have eight guys who have been starters on playoff teams. Eight guys that have not been role players, starters on playoff teams. So, yeah, I mean, if the Raptors don't get more impact off their bench, I don't believe their starting lineup has enough offensive firepower, because you mentioned Siakam. It's going to be very difficult for Siakam to be an efficient scorer in this series with what they're asking him to do defensively. Siakam's biggest job in this series is on the defensive
end. Called the NBA, man. It's called the NBA. Like, at the biggest stages, you're going to face higher level of competition, and you can't take one end of the court off. If you're trying to get to the finals, this is the type of battle that you would want for Siakam to be the type of player, and for Giannis. If he's going to be the best player in the world, he should be able to face people like Siakam. It's those that can do it, can do both. That's what makes the postseason special. That's how you can build your resume in the postseason.
And that's also one of the reasons why, we're talking about what the Raptors need to do. It's one of the reasons why I not only think the Bucks are going to win this series, I wouldn't be surprised if they win it in five games. I don't think Siakam is in. Siakam's going to be most improved player of the league this year, him or D'Angelo Russell. He's been an excellent story. But in year three, he is not ready for what they need from him in this series. Kyle Lowry was extraordinary in game one. Do we think he's going to be able to duplicate that? I'm talking about bringing Jeremy Lin off the bench as a possible spark. I know it's the NBA playoffs, and because it's the NBA playoffs, I don't think the Raptors have enough answers to the questions the Bucks are going to demand of them.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, do the Warriors have a chance to three-peat if KD does not return? Talk about that next on First Things First. 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France looking to win a historic fourth World Cup. All the matches will be live here on Fox and FS1. Time now for Going Viral, brought to you by TGI Fridays. Choose two meats plus two sides for only $14.99. Baker Mayfield has rocked his signature beard since getting in the spotlight, but has decided to opt for the clean-shaven look, with the Browns tweeting out the end of an era. Hashtag beardless Baker. I will just tell you guys, love the look. Love this look.
Oh,
Good
job, Baker. You graduated.
Bigger stunning
and
right
you look
now.
A lot younger. Face looks a little more stealth. You can tell your physique. And also, man, there's an article in like Men's Magazine. Read up on it, man. Those beards and stuff, they're not real clean. Those are one of the dirtiest spots on your body, Nick.
I'm setting myself up to take an L here from both of you. But I think it's a bad move by Baker. Not everyone looks good with a beard. You could argue I don't look good with a beard. I'll take that. I thought Baker looked great with a beard.
Looks better without.
I thought Baker, he looks older. He looks more established because he does look baby-faced
right there. He looks like Clint Eastwood without the beard. Look at that chiseled
Jana,
face.
Jana, who wants to look like, do you know what year it is?
There's a lot of white guys who want to look like Clint Eastwood.
Now,
that might not be your brand.
Clint Eastwood.
Scott Eastwood?
I don't know who that is.
His actor son, good-looking guy, tall,
Nick's not into good looking. Good point.
So like I said, I knew I was setting myself up. Baker, grow it back before the season, man.
That was all smoke, man, like yours. That wasn't real.
No smoke in my beard, man.
Time for your AT&T wake-up call. Bad news for the Arizona Cardinals. Patrick Peterson suspended for 6 games for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy. Peterson said he was definitely sorry for what happened. CeCe, what was your reaction to this?
I wanted an explanation. He was sorry for what? I mean, he said, I'm sorry for, but explain to me. Patrick Peterson's one of the great corners we've had in this business. And if you talk about athletes, there are not 10 better athletes than him.
Nope.
I've been knowing Pat Peterson and his family since he was 15 years old. Now, I knew that God blessed him with a special body. Now, along the way in making 8 Pro Bowls and being one of the highest paid and best corners in the game, was he getting some type of assistance? That's what I thought of. And when I didn't get an explanation, it just made me worry because Pat's one of the guys that I really, really respect. There's some things here that went unanswered.
See, the closest to an explanation that I read was he's dealt with type 2 diabetes.
Yep.
And he said that he was feeling extra lethargic, took something he shouldn't have, and it was kind of vague in that regard. So I don't know if he didn't give an explanation because he didn't want it to sound like an excuse and he just wanted to be accountable or because there is no good
answer.
When
you have a condition, there is a good explanation for it.
And so he did. So there was that out there. This is what I know. I know that unless Patrick Peterson's been on this stuff, whatever it was, since he was 15 years old, he doesn't need it. I mean, he is one of the.
Neither did A-Rod.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
No, the point that I'm making is we saw how dominant he was at LSU. First time he touched the football in the NFL, he scored a touchdown.
They're called PEDs for a reason, though. This is a huge mark against one of the great players we have in the game. We can't have standards. So do we like the guy? Oh, if he's on PEDs, we won't criticize him. No, PEDs are PEDs.
All right, let's get back to the NBA now. Lakers still recruiting a free agent to pair with LeBron. However, rival execs believe they could actually get a big three by signing Kyrie Irving and trading for Anthony Davis. Nick, you think this could happen?
I think the Lakers and Knicks both are going for this exact situation. Now, for both teams, it's almost impossible cap-wise, not totally impossible. It's a little harder for the Lakers because LeBron makes more than Kevin Durant's going to make next year. But, yeah, of course this is the goal. The goal is to recruit Kyrie and then basically trade everything on the roster away to get Anthony Davis and trade the rest of the roster away to create the cap space to get Anthony Davis. So, yeah, it's on the board. I don't think it's likely for either the Knicks or the Lakers, though, to end up with this type of big three with Kyrie and Anthony Davis being 2 and 3.
It's a wish list. Man, yeah. I can't wait till July 1st. It's going to be one of the most exciting off seasons that we've seen. The dominoes as far as the ping pongs have fallen. We know the Pelicans have that pick. And now Anthony Davis, where will he end up? Kyrie, does he come Brooklyn with the Nets? Does he rejoin LeBron in L.A.? Real possibilities.
The truth is for the Lakers, though, they would be thrilled with just getting one of these guys. They get one of these guys, and the plan is in place. They somehow get all three, and Rob Pelinka is going to go ahead and win Executive of the Year.
All right, moving on to game 2, the conference finals out west. Warriors beat the Blazers to take a 2-0 series lead. Draymond Green had a big night, 16 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, and 5 blocks. Nick, how important was Draymond last night?
This is a vintage Splash Brother era Warriors game where the two most important players are Steph and Dre. Dre did everything on both ends of the court. It wasn't just the 5 blocks. It was the energy pushing the ball. In that last 4 minutes when the Blazers went cold, Draymond scored or assisted every single Warrior basket. He was spectacular
Playmaker. On
all ends last night.
Yeah, and that third score, they needed. Andre Iguodala, great defensive play at the end. And now that we've gotten into the finals, his offensive productivity, inconsistent. Draymond's been the most consistent thing that they have outside of Steph. So, yes, this is the Warriors team that we fell in love with. This is the Draymond Green, not the Draymond who had the injured toe, about 20 pounds heavier several months ago. This is Draymond Green playing at his best. Great game last night.
All right, moving on to Kevin Durant. So the good news is the Warriors haven't lost a game since he went down. The bad news, they've got at least two more games to go without the two-time reigning finals MVP. Durant won't even travel for games 3 and 4. Here's head coach Steve Kerr on KD's outlook.
He continues to progress, and he has made progress, but, you know, it's a little more serious than we thought at the very beginning.
It's unfortunate, but it's part of the game, and we'll desperately need him to three-peat. That's no secret about that.
All right, Nick, how much does this affect the Warriors' chances to do just that, to three-peat?
Well, I don't think it affects their chances much at all to get to the NBA Finals. I think they have shown it's not that they're better without Kevin Durant, but they can beat the Blazers with Kevin Durant. They've shown they can beat the Blazers without him, just very different stylistically. I also think that Steve Kerr might not being totally genuine when he says it's more serious than they first thought. It might be more serious than they first let on, but we were on this show a few days ago saying you could basically rule him out games 1 through 4 just based on their own timeline that he hadn't returned to basketball activities.
And also he's still limping. I mean, if he's limping just walking around, he's obviously not ready to get back out and play competitively.
Right, and that they play every other day. You talked about calf strains that you'd suffered the day after this happened and how difficult it would be on a basketball player because jumping is such, obviously, an important part of what they do. But they are going to need all hands on deck against the Milwaukee Bucks. I understand they're 32-4 without Kevin Durant when Steph plays over the last 3 years. They are an exceptional team with or without Kevin Durant. But the Bucks are going to be the stiffest competition they have faced in the NBA Finals since Kevin Durant has been there. And by the way, the Raptors, if they end up winning that series, you could argue they will be at a place where with Kawhi Leonard, with clearly their bench will have somehow stepped up, that they would be certainly stiffer competition than Cleveland was last year and maybe the Cleveland the year before. So they need Kevin Durant. They need everyone they can possibly have once the NBA Finals get here, but they will be fine to get there without Kevin Durant on the way.
All the teams left are better than the team that they're playing. We saw last night's game. Nick said Portland had opportunity. They blew the game at the end. Toronto's a better team than Portland.
Yep.
There's no one that would take Portland as a team over Toronto and Kawhi and what they're doing, even though their bench has not been productive. So for me, when this initially happened, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Kevin Durant missed all of the postseason when it happened. I tore my left calf, and then several weeks later, I tore my right calf. And it's a lot harder to play basketball than it is because of the up and down. And as much as you're on your toes, and then not only your calf, then your Achilles starts to bother you. So Steve Kerr, this is what happens, all right? He strains his calf. No one knows the severity of it until you get an MRI. Then you get the MRI, and then it says it's a grade 1 strain. So you're like, oh, wow, he didn't blow his Achilles. It's only a grade 1 strain, so he should be back in a week. No, that's not necessarily true. So now after a week or so, they realize it hasn't recovered. He hadn't been able to get up on his toes. He's not ready to resume basketball activity. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. Now, Steve Kerr, he's surprised because it was only a grade 1 strain. But you don't know in the recovery process, when is it going to take? Is it going to take 5 days? Is it going to take 10 days? Each athlete's different. And the area is already damaged. He had 2 calf strains before. So there's some scar tissue in there. Obviously, there's some type of muscle deficiency that he hasn't corrected. So, no, I thought it was going to be something like this, especially knowing that he had injured the calf 2 other times.
But what we also now, I think everyone would agree on, is that while even if the Warriors aren't better without him, Steph and Draymond are. Steph and Draymond play this hive mind basketball, the two of them, where they are both ability to be playmakers. They both have such a unique skill. For Draymond, it's defensively. For Steph, it's range shooting. That when KD's not there, both of those guys have to play at such a high level. Draymond with so much energy and Steph with so much potency that those guys, they step up their game enough that it at least almost accounts for not having KD out there. I mean, 36 game sample is not a small sample size.
Sure.
And they're 32-4 without KD with Steph, and they've won 29 of 30. 29-1 in their last 30 without Kevin Durant with Steph. That's not just because of Steph. Draymond's been a huge part of it. We saw that last night as well.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. Odell Beckham Jr. was front and center at the Browns OTAs this week for the one day he was there. And while some think OBJ has a lot to prove, at least one of his current teammates is already convinced. Olivier Vernon, who played with Odell for the last 3 years in New York before also being traded to the Browns, spoke up about the wide receiver.
He get a bad rap. I don't know what the hell they got that from. But, I mean, if you never met the guy, you don't know the guy, you know, you just keep your mouth shut. So, you know, I played with the guy 3 years, and I was going on my fourth year. Hey, he's a great teammate, you know, great person.
See, what was your reaction?
Well, first of all, I have to figure out what a good teammate is, because I hear people all the time talk about guys in locker rooms. And for one, they haven't been to a whole bunch of locker rooms, so trying to determine what is the hierarchy in there and what really goes in the locker room, I don't think we have credible people that are analyzing that. And what it takes to be a good teammate, it's a little bit different than what it takes to be a good friend. And just because you might not have OBJ or some of these other wide receivers or other guys as your friend in a locker room, man, you need guys like him. He's a guy that's self-motivated. He loves the game of football. He's very, very good at it. And give me a list of guys. Give me five guys better than him at his position. So the guy shows up, wants to play, does his job very, very good. What else do you want from a guy? You want a guy to be quiet? Oh, we want everyone to be like Barry Sanders and Larry Fitzgerald and score touchdowns, hand the ball to the referee. But I know Barry Sanders. I've been knowing him for about 30 years. That is Barry Sanders. That's why you don't see him doing a whole bunch of stuff. Larry Fitzgerald, I've been knowing him for a long time. As much as I want to be like, hey, man, this is a show. No, that's who Larry is. He's the nicest kid I've ever dealt with ever before. And he's grown up to be a man that I'm very, very impressed with. But there's no one else like them. OBJ is trying to find himself, and he's actually trying to be the best version of himself. He's a very, very good football player. And I have had too many teammates sit right here and tell me, hey, Chris, man, he's a good guy. We had Snacks Harrison say, man, the guy's babysitting
baby.
My kid. So I've had guys that people wanted to always bang on them and say, you might not like their character. You might not like some of the things they did. Randy Moss is a great example. Randy Moss was a great teammate. Now, he did some things I didn't agree with, and there were some things I chastised him about privately. But as a teammate, Randy Moss was a great teammate. I just hate people putting these labels on guys, and they don't really understand what goes into a locker room and what our expectations in the locker room are and what we classify as a good teammate.
And if you're a player of Odell's caliber, even if you are a bad guy, even if you would never let him babysit your kids and you're a guy that's talking behind people's back, in the locker room, you are respected for what you can do on the field. Odell is a great football player. I believe he's the most talented wide receiver in the league. I've been saying that for quite some time. And his teammates love him. His coaches might find him to be a pain. Ownership might not like having to answer for him like they did in New York. But the criticisms of Odell, to me, are always in the fringes. The one thing that wasn't in the fringes was the video that he didn't think was going to get released in Paris, because that could have led to a suspension. The Josh Norman thing, that was not in the fringes because that did lead to a suspension. The other stuff is noise. And it's noise because he is, sometimes to his own detriment, unabashedly and unapologetically himself. And there is, some folks would rather false humility than honest confidence or even honest arrogance. And I've always said, as much as these guys can be authentic, I want them to be authentic. I wouldn't have liked the Barry Sanders thing Chris was like, actually, that was all an act. That was all because he was trying to be branding. But knowing that's who he actually is, you have an appreciation for that. And there is an element of, and people don't ever think about this, if everyone handed the ball to the ref, then we wouldn't have any appreciation for the guys who do. You need the dichotomy. You need the diversity of personality, just like you need diversity of thought and diversity of people.
What doesn't help is when his former general manager comes out and calls him part of a culture problem. Like, that doesn't help him. That doesn't help him going to a new place and wanting to start fresh. I wonder if, yes, he's getting a fresh start football-wise, does he also get a fresh start, you know, sort of whatever you want to call it, noise-wise, personality-wise, or do you not think he needs
also
one?
That guy who said the same thing about Odell, he said Eli Manning played some great football and we don't know what we're talking about. So be careful what credibility you're putting to what he said.
Yeah, no, I'm not giving him credibility. I'm saying stuff like that doesn't help.
She's saying, does it hurt Odell more?
I know the Giants' locker room. They didn't have a bunch of good football players, okay? That's why they weren't good. The Giants did not have a locker room problem. Like, when you're 7-9, you're 8-8, man, you one game outside the playoff, all you had a field goal, that locker room becomes important. Man, you win 4 or 5 games, your locker room chemistry, no locker room chemistry on a team that wins 4 or 5 games is great. So for me, Gettleman, after telling us, oh, I'm not trying to trade the kid, I'm trying to sign him, I would just be careful. NFL teams, this is what they do. And I know this because I went someplace with a rap sheet. They tell you, hey, man, I don't care what happened. We're going to judge you on what happens here. That's the common thing in sports. Keep that stuff over there. We don't care. You didn't do it to us. When you come in here, you got a clean slate, and we're going to judge you on what you do here.
But, Jenna, I think I understand what you're saying, which is, did Gettleman saying that make it more likely that folks outside of the Browns locker room are going to continue to bang on Odell?
Right.
And of course it did. And it's one of the reasons that Dave Gettleman doing that was totally unnecessary and I would argue a little below the belt. Dave Gettleman had no reason, just like...
He was just trying to justify
a
trade.
Absolutely. It was just like when Magic Johnson, after trading away D'Angelo Russell, then took a shot at him on the way out the door. You don't need to do that. Now, this is the... I am obviously, and I think the audience knows, a little biased because I know Odell and I like Odell. And so maybe I justify some of the antics in the end zone more than some do. But I admit that. There are some folks out there that have the same bias, but in the other direction. Some folks that are looking for a reason to criticize Odell Beckham and present it as if there is not a bias there. That to me is unfair. If people want to say when Odell, the next time he gets a 15-yard penalty for doing some celebration, well, keep in mind, you know what I mean, he and Nick are pals. Okay, take it with a grain of salt in my commentary. But we got to do this both ways. If this is a player that, I think you were pretty honest about it. There was a point in time you really didn't like Odell. You didn't like the way.
I still don't like the stuff that he did, but I still don't think what Gettleman said was right. I think he deserves a fair chance, and I don't think he's done what a lot of other players in the league are doing. I don't have an issue with it.
We know the NFL locker room, we got 1,600 players. There are so many guys who do actual bad stuff.
Agreed.
Not that it's ever justifiable, but are not producing the way Odell is. And those guys almost slide under the radar because they're not as interesting as Odell Beckham.
I wish people would stop. People that make a living talking sports, they try to act as if they had the talent, what they would do. I talk to you about this all the time. You're talking about the talent. You don't have the talent. You can't say, well, if I was that person, this is what I would do. Because I see people do shows. They have takes on things, and they do it their damn way. And don't nobody say nothing to them. But these athletes, they try to do it their way, and then they get criticized. The only reason why we're talking about this is because he's not at the OTAs. But there's hundreds of players. So every day we need to have a show with the players.
Tom Brady ain't at the OTAs.
We like Tom, though, man. Ain't no need to be talking about that. If you like the players, you create the narrative to make sure that you like them. But the other players, you try to create this persona that, oh, yeah, I'm against those guys that do stuff like that. Make up your mind what you want to do.
All right, let's leave it there. Coming up, did the Blazers blow their chance to get back in the series? Back to basketball ahead on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard joins us.
What up, man?
What's up, brother?
What's up, Chris? All good?
How are you?
Good.
All good.
Good. We've loved having you here
this
week.
It's been a great week.
A lot of fun
this
week.
It's always great with you guys.
All right, let's talk. The latest now with Anthony Davis. AD wants out of New Orleans, that we know. And there is no shortage of teams looking to trade for him, that we assume. According to a report, the Celtics are viewed now as the most attractive trade partner for the Pelicans. In addition to young players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, Boston has the numbers 14, 20, and 22nd pick in this year's draft. Broussard, should the Celtics blow up their young core for Anthony Davis?
It all depends on Kyrie Irving, period. That's like the end of the discussion. He's close with Anthony Davis. He can be talking to Anthony Davis right now. The Celtics should be talking to Kyrie. Look, if we can get AD, will you stay? That's it. And if Kyrie's just out of there, then I wouldn't worry about Anthony Davis if I'm them. So if Kyrie will stay, then I would trade Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, whoever, all these young guys out of there. Because one thing that does is get rid of your problem you had this year. Because it was a lot of the young guys who felt like they were better than they were. They've got to the conference finals without Kyrie. They're also in their rookie contracts, so trying to establish themselves as individual stars to get the big money. You get rid of all of that. Then you'd have a big three of Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and Gordon Hayward. You still got Al Horford, Marcus Smart. You could probably keep him, maybe Marcus Morris. Like, that's a nice squad. Now, that changes the tenor of your whole squad. And then the question becomes, can Brad Stevens handle all these Mercedes Benzes? Because that he didn't do that this year. So if Kyrie's out of there, there's no way I'm giving up my youngsters for what's probably a one-year rental. Because they're not going to – if they give up all those guys, Jason Tatum and so on, and lose Kyrie, they're not going to be as good as Milwaukee.
Well, that's –
they're not going to be as good as Philadelphia,
let me ask
probably.
You this. If they trade – if Kyrie leaves and they trade all those guys, are they as good as New Orleans? Like, if Anthony Davis...
That's a fair question.
Anthony Davis, like, Zion, Drew Holiday, and me versus what would be left in Boston,
right,
which is what? Gordon Hayward trying to come back, Al Horford if he opts in, and Anthony Davis.
You so, would make the playoffs because the East isn't as deep. But that's it. You're right.
But
you
think
wouldn't
they
be
would,
a contender.
I think they should make the playoffs if you were to stay in New Orleans next year with Drew Holiday, Zion, and a full 82
well, they
games.
They should have been able to fight for it this year.
Absolutely. But the so here's the thing. I think at first glance, you're like, man, David Griffin said what he wants before he was the GM of the Pelicans is an elite draft pick, an elite young player, an established veteran. Well, the Celtics can offer that Memphis pick, which one day might be an elite draft pick. They don't have an elite draft pick now. 14, 20, and 22 are,
right.
are 14's okay. 20 and 22 are 1 and 20 lottery tickets. But the Memphis pick, there's the elite draft pick. The established player is Marcus Smart, who I think they have to include for cap purposes because of salaries. And then the young star is Jason Tatum. And that then just, and I think Jason Tatum's obviously better than any young player the Lakers have to offer, better than any young player the Knicks have to offer. But is Jason Tatum actually a future All-Star? Is Jason Tatum the guy that he was looked like he was going to be after his rookie year? Or is he the guy that looks like he leveled off in year two? I got a fun little blind reveal for you. We haven't done one of these in a while. There's Jason Tatum. The guy on the right, same age, same draft class. He's about 5 inches taller, almost same percentage from three, more points, more rebounds. Who's the guy on the right? If we could, please. Maybe. Lauri Markkanen. If Lauri Markkanen was the centerpiece of a trade, because the Bulls can offer
That's different. Lauri Markkanen is playing on a bad team. Jason
we got
to
rebate all of them.
Right. Jason Tatum was playing on a team that was going for a championship. And Kyrie Irving's presence changed everything.
Agreed on all points, but the how much are we going to subtract from Markkanen's numbers? How much? What do we think they would look like if those two guys flip flopped? Do we think Lauri Markkanen couldn't have put up the season Jason Tatum did in Boston this year?
He's not nearly as good as Jason Tatum.
You think it's a massive gap, Markkanen to Tatum?
And I like Markkanen, but no, come on.
So you think Jason Tatum's a future
All-Star? You can't just put a bunch of numbers on the screen and say who's better. You got to look at the context.
No, I did look. I agreed, but the context
if
is
If they
also...
played the same position, you might be able to do some comparison, but their skill sets are totally different. I understand what you're trying to say because he's just trying to make the point for Chicago as a franchise. But the truth of the matter is all that don't matter. Anthony Davis don't want to go to Chicago. He's from Chicago. Anthony Davis does not want to go to Boston.
Right.
So if Kyrie says, I'm out, Anthony Davis, they don't have that prime pick this year that David Griffin said that he wants.
Right.
And now you can't put Tatum into a deal and Kyrie being out because people have talked about the Kawhi experience, all right? And, okay, it's been good. But first day of free agency, Kawhi could be with the Clippers. And then everybody would be talking about, you know, Paul George, that really worked out. That's a precedent. Well, Paul George might have made a mistake. They got bumped at round number one. He's not going to be getting all that goodwill. Oh, man, great job. Small market, man. Great. Watch other players try to follow this. No siree. Man, guys want to win. And in this, I believe that Kyrie realized because he didn't pick Boston.
Right.
Man, I get my second chance at this. I don't know how long I'm going to play. I'm getting ready to get me a superstar. So he can either go to New York and either try to lure someone to Brooklyn or he can join LeBron in L.A. If I'm Kyrie, man, I'm not thinking about playing in Boston anymore.
Even if you could get AD, like, and I don't know that AD would stay even AD with Kyrie, but you talk to him.
This is the thing. AD does not have the personality to change the franchise. Because Kyrie was not – when those
Kyrie
guys –
Kyrie would still be the leader. It'd still be Kyrie's team. I agree with that.
Yes, and just because you ship those guys out of the locker room, Kyrie has a problem leading. So even though he's not leading though Tatum, Rozier, all right, but he's going to be leading some other young players.
So we've been talking about this for a couple weeks now. Where do you think, if it isn't Boston then, that AD ends up?
I think he ends up in New York. Because I think David Griffin is going to make it very hard on the Lakers to get that deal done. One, because it's the Lakers and the whole situation. Two, because it's the West. And New York, we only know of two places that Anthony Davis would say, I'll stay long term. New York and the Lakers. And so the Lakers, RJ, look, the idea of pairing RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, I love that idea. I think both those guys, you think Zion will put up big numbers? I think RJ Barrett can come into the league and score right away. You got him and Jrue Holiday in your backcourt. That's pretty good. Then New York may have to get a third team involved. Yeah. To get a veteran that they want. But they also got picks from Dallas they can offer in the future.
They have the 2021 pick from Dallas. The 2023 pick from Dallas is probably going to end up being a second rounder or a bad first rounder.
But so they have an unprotected.
The 2021. No, the unprotected is
now,
2021.
Now, Dallas may be good by then with Luka, but.
I Anthony Davis, to me, I agree with Broussard. It's New York or L.A., and it will come down to how good does David Griffin think R.J. Barrett is? If he thinks R.J. Barrett, like you said, Chris, you talked to a GM that thought it was a three-person draft. Yep. If he agrees it's a three-person draft, then he will go to the Knicks. If he thinks it's a two-person draft, like some guys do, Zion and Ja, and then there's a muddle 3-7, the Lakers can offer better players that are currently in the league to go along with the fourth pick. That's the – we don't know where Anthony Davis is going. I feel like we know this. Kyrie Irving is not going back to Boston. Kyrie Irving did not have a good time this year in Boston. And last year, when he was having a good time, he got hurt. And so Danny Ainge has not shown the propensity to go all in with no backup plan. And losing Kyrie, trading away what was your haul from that Nets heist for what could just be 1 year of Anthony Davis on a mediocre team would not make sense.
All right, Chris, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, how were the Warriors able to pull out the win last night? Talk about that next on First Things First. Here, Chris Broussard, Blazers, Warriors, Game 2. KD out for this one. Might be out for a while. Warriors trailed by as many as 17 in this, but Kevon Looney's dunk with 53 seconds left puts them up 1. 15 seconds to go. Same score. Steph Curry to Draymond Green, and the Warriors go up 3. Big night for Green. Last chance for Portland. Dame Lillard. Oh, stripped by Andre Iguodala. Lillard wanted the foul. No call there. Warriors pull out the win, 114-111. They now go up 2-0 in the series. Steph dropping 37 in this one. Here's Steve Kerr after the win.
We stole that game. I thought they outplayed us for much of the night, the majority of the night. But, you know, we brought enough competitive fire in the second half to overcome, you know, their great play.
I mean, they stole it, but they earned it down the stretch. They made more plays than us in, you know, the last 2 minutes, last 3 minutes. But, I mean, I like our chances going forward. I like the way we came out and competed. You know, we got to bring that same energy at home.
All right, Broussard, did the Warriors win this game or did the Blazers lose it?
I think the Warriors won. I really did. Whether it's cockiness, the complacency that's dogged them all year, or pacing themselves because they know KD is not there. I just felt like the Warriors weren't worried when they were down. Now, Kerr was concerned, but they weren't worried when they were down. And then when they needed to, twice, they turned it on. In the third quarter, in 4 minutes, they turned a 15-point deficit into a 1-point lead. And they did it. They did it with defense. Their defense got so much more aggressive, and they stopped Portland from getting offensive rebounds. They gave up 8 offensive rebounds to Portland in the first half, 2 in the second half, because they just wanted to. Kerr said his biggest problem with the first half was that they didn't play hard enough, and they didn't. It was no strategic adjustments. It was like, look, let's get after it. They got after it in the third quarter, took the lead, let their foot off the gas a little bit. Then late in the game, they did the same thing. They turned it on. Now, we can sit here and say, well, Portland made some mistakes defensively. They made some errors. They lost track of Steph or Clay or whatever. But that's the problem when you play Golden State.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Right. You have to play 48 minutes of error-free basketball for the most part defensively. And as much as they move around, as much as you have to extend your defense 30 feet, you're going to make mistakes here or there. They made a few. Golden State took advantage. So I just think they turned it on when they needed to.
Yeah, I thought Golden State won the game. Golden State made some serious adjustments at halftime after an embarrassing first half. And that press in the second half, that trapping, forcing turnovers, and forcing Portland, they were starting their offense 35 to 40 feet away. You can't be a threat when they're trapping Damian Lillard. He's throwing the ball sideways, and you don't put the ball into a playmaker's hand. So from a strategy standpoint, Steve Kerr at halftime, putting the press on, that ignited them, that got them started on the fast break where they started getting some easier looks. I like the way Portland approached the game, though. They made some strategic adjustments. They played a better game in game number two, but you got to give it to the champions. I always lean towards, because I tell people, if I drop a pass, it's not because I was nervous. It's not because I was a situation. I just dropped it. Either I wasn't concentrating, the ball was coming, it was a little bit difficult, but I dropped it. Most guys, when they miss shots, it's not as if they were thinking about missing that shot. It's just that they missed an open shot. Man, in the second half, Portland, their offense looked totally different. The Warriors, their overall ability to be aggressive and take the fight to Portland, they snatched this victory away from the Portland Trailblazers.
Listen, I want to give the Warriors immense credit. Steph was sensational. Draymond might have been even better given everything he did, just the way pushing the pace, running the court. There was a moment in when the Blazers took, I think, an 8-point lead midway through the fourth quarter. It was 108-100, and we'll get back to that moment later. Draymond beats everyone down the court and gets a layup to all of a sudden offset the Myers-Leonard three and getting a layup of his own. The Warriors were great in that third quarter. In particular, that is where they, to me, that's where the Warriors put themselves in position for, in my eyes, to win the game. But then the Blazers not only weathered the storm, they did build an 8-point lead with 4.5 minutes left. And from that moment forward, they made one shot. From that moment forward, Draymond took over the game. CJ was 0-for-5. Dame couldn't do anything. He missed one shot and then got the ball stolen from him. That was a tough one for Dame because Iggy was trying to foul because they were up three. They right. wanted to foul there. Didn't get the foul, ended up getting the steal despite it. It's tough for me. And this is the biggest game for any of these players on the Blazers ever, except for, I guess, Rodney Hood, who's played in the finals. And the biggest game in the franchise since, you remember the Kobe to Shaq lob?
Yep.
This is the biggest game for the Blazers.
15 going into the fourth quarter.
This is the biggest game the franchise has had since that moment. That was the year 2000. You're up 8 with 4.5 minutes left with a chance to steal the game, to steal home court, I should say. If we're going to see in these series a team steal a game. I feel like Milwaukee kind of stole one from Toronto. Now we've had Golden State steal one from Portland. It's tough when the team that's the heavy favorite, the better team, is the one that steals a game they should have lost. That, to me, is what happened last night in Oracle.
But I think a lot of that, like, again, my opinion is that Golden State, we've seen it all year. When they get complacent, they turn it on when they need to. Kerr's complained about it. He mentioned in his quote, we just saw competitive fire. That's what they brought in bunches, and I think late when they got down 8, like, I don't think Portland just missed the shots. I think it was the defensive intensity that made them miss
on some of them.
Of
but CJ
shots.
Had two that were wide open.
CJ didn't have a great night, obviously, and that's one of the things Portland's got to look at going forward. Even in the previous series, CJ and Lillard have rarely had their big nights together.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.